Hi, welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We get out of the studio and onto the road to find the kind of radio you don't hear so much anymore. Stories off the beaten path and usually away from the top headlines. We figure the weekend is a good time for that. Time to lean back a little, slow down, meet somebody interesting, hear what people are saying. Of course, when we're not on the radio, you can catch up with us on Facebook. Just search Indiana Weekend. And we'd love to hear your thoughts about the show, your comments, thoughts about whom we might talk with, or where you would like to hear our microphones. Our email address is, conveniently enough, indianaweekend@gmail.com. I'm John Strauss. The Beatles. For a band that broke up in 1970, they demonstrate remarkable staying power. The latest evidence? A new release of the band's albums on vinyl. They're available from EMI as a $400 14-disc boxed set or separately. By the way, their series of remastered CDs released just 3 years ago won a Grammy. That got us to thinking, which album, if you were going to buy only one, would you get? Some people will say the White Album, a huge commercial success after it was released in 1968, or maybe Revolver or one of their other discs. For Jonathan Brooks, the best of the Beatles is Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, released a year before the White Album. Brooks is a music professor at Anderson University who lectures on Sgt. Pepper's and joins others who describe it as the first real concept album in rock. Bob Dylan, after hearing the album, is said to have told Paul McCartney, "Oh, I get it. You don't want to be cute anymore." Brooks says the idea of a theme linking a series of compositions together goes back much further than the 1960s.
It was a brand new idea, at least to interject into the popular music environment of that time. But there's a lot of precedence in history all the way going back hundreds of years in Western music that's something you could draw from.
Would Beethoven's Ninth have been a...
Absolutely. Beethoven's Ninth would have been one of the great examples of program music, and that drives music across the 19th century.
Why is that? And what do you mean by program music?
Program music is the idea that you would have some story that pulls together the entire symphony. In that particular symphony, what Beethoven is doing is he has three movements. The first movement is too dark. The second movement's too energetic. The third movement is too slow and pretty. And what he comes to in the fourth movement, he presents you with the correct theme that is just right. And he actually rejects the other three themes. So this is a perfect representation of what music's goal should be doing.
Oh, that's what the point that he was trying to make.
Right. This is what music should be doing. And so he actually rejects those other three movements as a part of the program that he's playing out in that particular symphony.
You know, my favorite movement is the second movement, though.
I have to tell you.
So you like energy.
You know, that was actually used as the theme for NBC Nightly News back in the 1960s. It's just got that sound of energy and
yes,
movement.
Absolutely.
But Beethoven was trying to say, no, that's not what music should be.
Right. And what the Ode to Joy does is it's singable. It means the whole mass can join in doing it. It brings the world, the secular world, together with the sacred world. In some ways, he was actually breaking down all of the barriers that divided the world into sacred, secular, popular, classical. That he's breaking down all those walls and trying to find one theme that unites the world together.
So what links Beethoven's Ninth Symphony with Tommy or Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club?
You know, it'd be hard to say that there were literal connections. At least with Paul McCartney, you can say he was going around listening to classical music. He was aware of his Karlheinz Stockhausen at the time, who would have been one of the most kind of bizarre out there avant-garde classical composers. And he seemed to have been really interested in bringing classical music. So is there a chance he heard it? Did he have friends that were discussing it? It's very likely that he may have. But at least the Beatles, Simon and Garfunkel, The Who, all of these groups were, they were really just producing individual songs.
Right, and they would just write hits, right? And that's what it was all about.
Right, you're just collecting a bunch of songs together and you put them on there and you send out each song. There was no expectation that any of these songs were going to be meaningful. They were there to entertain you.
Then somebody said, well, look, as long as we're collecting them all together, why not make a single or some sort of unifying statement?
Exactly. Well, I mean, if you can start thinking about the kinds of statements that get the Beatles in trouble prior to when they do Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, John specifically said something along the lines of, we're more popular than Jesus now. So why is an artist taking the time to make statements about Christianity and the relation of popular music to Christianity? This is, and why is an audience out there even worried that John Lennon is even saying something like this? There is a changing dynamic in the world of 60s music in which these artists are becoming people that are carrying real messages to convey to an audience that really wants to hear what these people are saying. And it's a message that's very often working on an ethical, moral, religious level. So, I mean, these are big statements that people are beginning to take on, and the audience, the listening audience, is beginning to take them seriously. So it's hard to always convey in a single song big, complex messages. What you need to do is collect a bunch of songs together that are all conveyed around a single topic so that you can really convey this big message.
Did you start out being especially interested in the Beatles? And
I did. And for me, this is what really...
And you're a young guy, so you weren't necessarily...
I'm not. So,
cheering when they...
And this is once... No, I was not out there cheering for them. I was probably not even... I wasn't even a wink in the eye at the time. So I... You know, and for me, I'm having to revive and relive 60s history and the music at that time. And sometimes, believe it, it is hit or miss. There are some pieces I know better than some. For me, what really drew me back into the 60s was the Beatles and Simon and Garfunkel. So those were the two groups and people sets that I was really more familiar with.
Well, everybody would agree at this point that the Beatles came along and had a big role in the British invasion.
Absolutely.
And beyond just their impact on music, a cultural change.
You know, there's just a few stats that you can talk about what the Beatles did. If I remember correctly, 60% of all record sales in 1964 between January and April were the Beatles, which means that 6 people in 10 walking out of a record store would have been carrying a Beatles album. It's just hard to believe that kind of unprecedented success. They also had the top 5 songs in the country simultaneously in April 1964. They had 15 different recordings that were released that each went gold, sold over 1 million albums in 1 year, 25 million albums for the entire year. So it was, and it was earth-shattering. And I mean, one of the other things, one of the images that's always so clear of the females that are screaming in almost kind of a religious hysteria. And, you know, I think what the Beatles ultimately did, I know it's hard to say exactly what happens. It's a magical moment. You can't ever describe it. But they actually gave people the license to release and be free. And I think if you look at music before that and the world in which we were living, it was a highly conformed world, highly restrained. And people, and the Beatles said, you can be free, release. And people released and became free, and they lost all control at this point. And the Beatles' music does that. The Beatles' music at this time is, it was purpose was to go into a club and make people be free and go crazy. And so they were able to do this on a recording and put it on a large-scale platform.
Music professor Jonathan Brooks of Anderson University on the subject of the Beatles, a topic brought to mind by the re-release of remastered versions of their albums on vinyl.
Indiana Weekend, real radio from just down the road. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line to let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com. Now here's John Strauss.
The Beatles officially broke up more than 40 years ago, but a new release of their material, once more on vinyl, is making news. The record label EMI will sell you a 14-disc set for $400, or you can buy the albums individually. Music professor Jonathan Brooks of Anderson University has a research interest in the history of music theory and has been intrigued by the Beatles.
Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band was their first really clear concept album. You could already say maybe it's emerging with Rubber Soul and then Revolver, then you lead into Sgt. Pepper's in 1967. And at this time, what we know about the Beatles is they were becoming increasingly interested in drug use and the religious qualities specifically of LSD and how it was going to be the salvation of the world, that it was going to actually be the way in which the world was fixed, that it was going to show the way people how they were going to love everybody in the world and be connected to everything and be fully experiencing and living life. So especially with the albums Revolver and Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, there appears to have been the idea that they were organizing these albums with lots of different types of music specifically to be used during a tripping session with LSD. And that was part, one of the ways in which it was being organized. And they were actually perhaps following the directions of one of the LSD prophets of the time, Michael Hollingshead, who was with the World Psychedelic Center in London. Specifically with the album Sgt. Pepper's, they were actually trying to, it looks, in my opinion, they're actually basing this around the concept of loneliness, and that all of the individual songs and that the album cover itself are each talking about this specific idea. One of the problems with the Beatles is in their own personal biographies is that they were becoming more and more imprisoned in their motel rooms and being cut off more and more from the world. They couldn't leave. They were actually in danger of their lives. The most famous of these incidents actually happened in Manila, Philippines in 1966. They accidentally offended Imelda and Ferdinand Marcos, the leaders of the Philippines at the time. And all of a sudden, Imelda Marcos went on the radio and told them that the Beatles had snubbed them. And their security detail disappeared. And they couldn't find a car to get to the airport. And there were mobs of people along the way looking to kill them. And they barely escaped the island with their lives. And then you get some descriptions of John Lennon being kicked and pushed around. And luckily at this moment, he actually kept his mouth shut. And they didn't make it off the island. So he didn't fight back for once. He realized the danger of the situation.
But most of the time when they were imprisoned, it was by adoring fans, right? It was just difficult for them to go in public.
Right, literally. And there was one other sense here. And this is where the album cover really plays into this. The Beatles had lost control of the Beatles. The public had taken over the meaning of the Beatles' identity and made it what they wanted to be, and the Beatles no longer could make the Beatles be what they wanted to be. And so here you have this wonderful moment where the Beatles decide to no longer be the Beatles and become Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. And by becoming another band, they can actually try to reclaim the identities they had lost.
What are the key songs in that album from your standpoint?
Well, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, I think, is one that's really noticeable. And what's interesting about this is that those particular songs, it's actually done twice. It's done as the first track on the album, and then it's done as a reprise at the end of the album. It's actually supposed to be taken, ironically, as a live audience, as a live performance. The reason this being ironic is they had decided to quit touring prior to doing this album, but yet they're still presenting it as if it's a live performance. You get the Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band the first time, that's the introduction of this live performance, and then you do the reprise to come back and say the live performance is over. So that actually inside of the album, that actually provides kind of like the bookends for how you're supposed to understand this live presentation. The last song on the album, then, is A Day in the Life, which is the encore number. You come back and you do your final number to close out the show. I think A Day in the Life, when most people talk about it, it has this such catastrophic overtones to it, or this apocalypse that's taking place. And you can specifically hear it really in that big orchestra slide where it starts at the very bottom, and they spend 24 measures climbing to their top note, and then they slam down on that final chord, that final E major chord that holds out for, I think, 30 or 40 seconds that you hear just that one chord. And there's a different ways in which you can take it. I think in their opinion, I think they're actually seeing that there's hope, that through drugs at this time, that there is some hope for the world, that there is a salvation. And so the world can continue into apocalypse personally and as a collective if we don't make change, or if we don't, perhaps through the use of LSD, if we don't tune in, we're going to end up in this personal or collective tragedy. But there is a way out of this. And so you can take it both as potential catastrophe or hope, salvation in this process. And that, again, taking on these kind of religious overtones, which takes it beyond just a bunch of silly ditty songs to really talking about the tragedies of the world and the way in which the world was suffering at that particular time.
And tonight, Mr. Kite is topping the bill.
J.
Jonathan Brooks, reflecting on what some regard as the first concept album. Sgt. Pepper from 1967, ranked by Rolling Stone as the best rock album ever.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss on Indiana Public Radio.
We're talking today about the Beatles on the occasion this month of a re-release on vinyl of their iconic albums. Professor Jonathan Brooks of Anderson University has studied the group and points out that they had an intuitive grasp for composing and blending sounds and styles.
The Beatles were not knowledgeable in a way of, like, they did not know how to notate. That they actually were very lucky to have had George Martin along to help them do all of the things that they needed in that particular regard. But what they were is they were highly intuitive. They were able to orally grasp sounds and use them. So all of those important musical aspects that we normally that might be expected to occur in music, they were doing. One of the things that occurs in music, and this is 1,000 years old, is that melodies have nice arch shapes. And if you go back and look at Beatles melodies, they start relatively low. They find a single high pitch very often in that particular melody, and they come back down. So, yes, the Beatles were not only doing things that were meaningful at that time, they were actually capturing musical goals that have been a part of 1,000-year history of that continuum and capturing and doing those things very well. Another thing that I think the Beatles do that was maybe better than anybody else is they were able to write music in such a way that the music actually helps to convey the meaning of the text and actually add even more meaning than the text alone can convey. I think if you take a song, another song from Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, Good Morning, Good Morning, dun, 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 you get this very ugly, brassy sax coming in. And what you know very immediately is this is not a good morning. There's absolutely nothing good about this morning. And you don't know that from just the words. You actually have to add the music to tell you how to understand those words. And another level at which you can see it is the nasal sound of John's voice. He actually changes his voice. Good morning, good morning, good morning. And you can actually hear the way in which he sings it. This is very nasally, ugly sound. It's not supposed to be pretty. And that actually changes the meaning. So the way in which they controlled sounds, the way in which they built their harmonies and their melodies actually enhanced, added more meaning to the text than the text actually has alone.
We're in your office, Jonathan Brooks, and I see a piano here. I see there with 16th notes. My goodness. Oh, look, you have the complete Beatles, two-volume.
I do. What would be a good song?
And these books are, well, you've been through these a lot. These are...
Yes, they are falling apart. I'm going to need to replace them here in the near future. So this is the opening of She's Leaving Home, which is interesting because it uses a harp, and it sounds something like this. And so what you have here at the opening is this harp, and it sounds just... So that's the opening harp. I don't know of any other rock song that has ever used a harp in it. So one of the things that seems to do is you connect harp, I think, very often with a sacred situation. So this song doesn't really ever talk about religion, but it seems to actually, by just using an instrument that would come out of that background, it begins to reference it.
What's it trying to evoke, do you think?
Well, I think it's a part, if you go back to Eleanor Rigby, that's one of the things that they're condemning in that, is that the failure of this minister to do anything that's meaningful. And this is one of the things that Paul and John were very open about, is how empty their religious experience was as a child. So I think at the same time they're talking about how these parents are failing to meet the needs of this daughter, they're not really understanding what she needs to be happy. At the background of this, I think it's also actually they're trying to keep the idea that this is a religious failure in the background. One of the things, the other moment where it's really interesting, at the very end, the harp comes back and they play a final amen cadence that you would attach to a hymn, which would be in a hymn situation, would be something like 4-2-1, except they add the harp to that.
So they're adapting a hymn.
Right. They actually bring up hymn references, sacred music references, putting this in the background of this. So nothing in the text says it, But the music seems to be talking about this kind of a religious failure in the background of this. One of the things that John said is that these statements that he used for the parents actually comes from his Aunt Mimi, who was the same person that was taking him to church when he was a child. So I think it can be seen also on one hand as a criticism of middle-class values, but it's the idea of that being attached to religious practice at the time and being empty.
So this idea of quoting from other influences in the writing and the music, making statements about life and major issues going on in society.
The Beatles are becoming more and more a subject of academic research. There are actually a number of books out there with lots of footnotes talking about the Beatles. So you can actually see academia taking them on as a serious topic.
Why is that? I mean, they're not going to do that about U2, although they may. I mean,
I think there's a... I think one of the things that we like to do in the West is we like to choose one group or one artist that becomes a representation of a time to capture that. So, you know, I know there are other good groups, Simon and Garfunkel, Rolling Stones, The Who, but I don't think they quite reach the level of cultural and political and religious significance that the Beatles did. Ultimately, the potential of any composer or group or band, any musical ensemble, its success is going to be based on the ability for them to connect with the ideals and the myths of either a particular time or a larger cultural epic. For the Beatles, they somehow represent both the overthrow of a conformist 50s. They also show the model of the artist as someone who can talk about their time in a meaningful way, bringing religious significance to the actions of their times. You know, one of the things the Beatles do is they are a representation of the common man. There are four guys who none of them really could read music and all of a sudden have risen to the heights of the pantheon of music to become studied and respected. And so how do they do that? Well, one of the things is people were looking to exalt the common man. That's one of the ideals that they catch on to. With the idea of loneliness in Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, I think they're catching on to a world that is disconnected, and they're actually trying to either produce solutions or at least talk about the ways in which that's... So they call it ideals that were significant during the 60s and ideals that are even larger in a larger span of history, and they're catching these large cultural myths. They may not even be aware that they were doing it. It may have even been an accident, but they caught the wave and were there to do it.
That's Jonathan Brooks, a professor of music at Anderson University, on the Beatles and what their music means to us even now, 40 years after they broke up, but with a fan base still loyal enough to support a re-release this month of their albums on vinyl. You can get that set of 14 records for $400. If you're only going to buy one, though, Dr. Brooks suggests you might consider Sgt. Pepper, widely considered to be rock's first concept album. That's our show for today. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Marcus Jackman. Glad you could join us this time and hope you'll stay in touch. Drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com if you would like more information or have a suggestion. And a reminder that we also need your stories, your ideas for places we should go and people we should talk to. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week. Until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio, I'm John Strauss.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss of the Ball State Journalism Department. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Marcus Jackman. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from Dillman's Furniture, Muncie, serving East Central Indiana with home furnishings from Flex Steel, Bassett, and Simmons Beautyrest. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana.